club.
Here we go.
Because the run home just got a little bumpier. Rush, rush, rush.
You cannot be serious.
I've got to see you every friggin' week.
There's got to be an investigation into this.
This is the Triple M Rush Hour with MG.
Yes, g'day. No MG, in fact. MG and Liam are having the week off. MG, of course, celebrating the Panthers' victory in the grand final. And good luck to him. As we always say, he is the Prime Minister of Penrith. So you've got Maroon, you've got James Graham. G'day, Jammer.
Hey, mate. How you doing? Back for more?
Absolutely. Well, it's funny. Every time we get you on Triple M, which seems to be a lot lately, we get always get some sort of correspondence from the UK. I didn't realise... this email tells me that you are one of seven children.
Yeah, that's right, mate. And as you would probably predict, I am Malcolm in the middle as well, the crazy middle child. So, yeah, that's me.
The first thing we thought when we were ripping off these emails earlier was you're the you'd be the biggest of the kids and, you know, the one that played front row at the very highest level. And your old man being a science teacher, did he perhaps... create something in a lab and then use it in, you know, like, you know, six drops of Essence of Terror, five drops of Sinister Sauce.
Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that. He gave me some good ingredients, my old man.
Yeah. Anyway, one of seven. So are you going to go down that road yourself? How many you got?
No, well, growing up in Carnage sort of taught me that I don't want to be a part of that. So I've just got two beautiful young girls, I think we'll stick with that because in a house of seven, there is never any peace and quiet. I don't know how my parents did it. It was a sight to behold. There was never a moment of peace and quiet. There was always a fight between someone. So my parents were just constantly putting out fires.
Absolute chaos.
Yes, organized chaos.
Yeah, I think I had two. I'm one of two, and I have two grandkids. I think two is the magic number. But anyway, plenty to talk about. Our favourite game, of course, is rugby league. Brent Reed, Reedy's Mail. We'll get to that shortly. We've got a big sporting weekend, which involves the Super League Grand Final, which we'll talk to you about, Jimmy Graham, and one of Australia's great sports people at the moment, Alexander the Great Volkanovsky, joins the show as well. But right now, as usual, we do this. Yes, one of Australia's premier rugby league journalists, the great Brent Reed. Okay, Reedy, let's rip straight in here. A topic that I love to discuss is rugby league expansion. We will know more tomorrow, I believe.
Yeah, look, they had a meeting with the clubs today, Peter Volandis and Andrew Abdo, and they basically the clubs left that meeting under the understanding that expansion will go ahead in 2023. There's a meeting tomorrow of the committee that's going to make a decision on who the club is that will come into the competition in 2023, whether it's Redcliffe or the Firehawks or the Jets. So I reckon out of that meeting tomorrow, we'll know who the club's going to be. I'd imagine if there's not an announcement tomorrow, there'll be an announcement at some point next week. Expansion's a goer, and there's some clubs who are now in a mad panic to try and sign players in the next 3 weeks before they hit the market on November 1.
Expansion, definitely. Redcliffe, almost definitely. Can I say that?
You could, Maroon, but there's actually been a bit of momentum in the last couple of days, or a bit of a whisper that it's not a fait accompli. You know, some of the other bidders may have come back in the picture, but my belief is it'll be Redcliffe, but we've got to wait until tomorrow to firm that up.
Hey, Reedy. If you're a player, going back to the player market movement, if you're a player, you'd be mad to sign anywhere within the next 3 weeks if you're off contract, wouldn't you?
Well, you'd think so, Jimmy. I mean, you think some of the players who are out there now, and some clubs in particular have got a lot of players coming off contract in a year's time. You know, Melbourne, Parramatta, obvious clubs, got a heap of players who are coming off in a year's time. And some of those players, you know, would be really attractive to a new team. You look at a guy like Reed Marnie, a Parramatta, Queensland kid from the Sunshine Coast. If Redcliffe get in the comp, if Redcliffe are the team that ultimately gets there, he's a logical signing for them because part of their corridor or their area they want to own is the Sunshine Coast. You look at Melbourne, the likes of Brandon Smith, Felice Kafusi, Christian Welch, they're all Queenslanders. So, you know, if you're those blokes, you're not going to rush to re-sign a contract or sign a new contract in the next 3 weeks, I wouldn't have thought. And I'm sure your management won't want you scrambling to sign a contract because there's going to be some inflation caused by expansion, and they're the sort of guys who are really going to benefit from it.
Yeah, it's certainly going to tip the transfer market on its head. But who do you think will be top of the list? I'm thinking, like yourself, Queensland-based player or originally from Queensland and a spine member. They'll want to bring someone that's going to attract some other players to go with them as well. Who's top of the shopping list for them?
Well, I mean, the three names that constantly get mentioned are Cameron Munster, Caelan Ponga, and Cary Grant. Three Queensland blokes. Caelan's got an option, his contract for 20 at the end of 22. Harry's got a mutual option. I don't know how they work exactly, so I'm not sure what that means. And look, Munster's on contract till the end of 23, but there's talk that maybe Melbourne may not necessarily stand in his way if he wants to leave at the end of 22. So they're the three names that we keep hearing. I mean, it's interesting from a player's perspective, Jimmy. If it was you, would you be holding off?
Oh, absolutely. If I had 3 weeks to sign with my club, or in 3 weeks' time I get the ability to negotiate with potentially a new expansion team, there's no advantage to signing now unless the club were going to put you in the position and say, hey mate, this deal's now or never. But mate, to be fair, we all know that these sort of talks are happening behind closed doors anyway. I know, like, officially you can't speak to players, but you're not kidding anyone if you don't think player managers up and down the country, over in the UK and New Zealand, aren't fielding those questions now. Like, is this player available? Would he go to Redcliffe or whoever it may be for dollars X, Y, and Z?
Well, funnily enough, Jimmy, that's one of the great misnomers. You actually can talk. You can talk to them. You just can't put a contract in front of them and get the contract signed. So there's nothing wrong with Redcliffe right now talking to Reid Marnie's agent or Harry Grant and saying, mate, we're really interested. If you wait till November 1, you know, there's nothing illegal about that. There's nothing wrong with that under the rules. And I'm sure that's going on left, right, and centre at the moment. I'm sure all three of those bidding teams are talking to agents saying, don't do a deal. Wait till November 1. We'll have a contract in front of your bloke on November at 12:01 on November 1, ready to go. Just wait till then.
Yeah, it might be worth staying up, pulling an all-nighter for that, mightn't it? Just wait until 12. But keep refreshing the emails. Keep refreshing. Fresh to see what I got offered. But hey, mate, going back to the meeting that Abdo and Volandis had with the clubs today, was there any pushback at all from the clubs, or are they all happy to get this new expansion team on board?
Look, the only pushback is they want to know what's in it for them almost, whether they're going to get more money out of it down the track. And they couldn't give them any guarantees on that front because they haven't done the free-to-air deal yet. So they couldn't give them any guarantees. Yes, you'll have X amount extra from 2023 onwards. What they did say to them was, if you look at the AFL, when they expanded to two teams in Adelaide, two teams in Perth, or Western Australia, it generated a lot more money for the game, and you will benefit from that. So whilst they didn't give them any guarantees on how much more they'll get, they basically gave them the indication, this will gain the game more revenue and you will benefit out of that. So there was a little bit of pushback, but I think it was made pretty clear to them, we're going ahead with it. It's going to happen.
Yeah, that's good to hear, mate, because, you know, I'm all in favour of growing the game and having a long-term view of it. Obviously, it's now 17 teams. That does create one or two headaches in terms of bye rounds at the start to kick off the competition and finish the competition, as well as Magic Round. A team will miss out on that. But is there a long-term view to potentially bring in an 18th team, and what would be the sort of time frame around that?
Yeah, I wouldn't rule that out. I think they'll do that down the track, and I would imagine they'll do that in line with the next broadcast. So this current the next broadcasting deal with Fox goes to the end of 27. The new free-to-air one will match that. It'll go to the end of 27. I reckon the TV deal after that, from 28 onwards, I reckon they'd be aiming for an 18th team in 2028. So I think that'll happen. I don't think they'll stay at 17 for forever. I think there'll be expansion to 18 teams probably from 2028.
Okay, now we've got to let you go, Reedy, but in a word or as quick as you can, is it safe to assume that whether it's Redcliffe, Firehawks or Ipswich, Wayne Bennett is going to be the head man?
Yeah, done deal. Will happen. It's, you can assume it, Maroon.
Okay, good to catch up with you, Reedy. Enjoy the off-season.
Okay, guys. Cheers.
See you, mate.
Whether it's cross sport, same game or same race multis, bet with Bluebet. Bluebet, the true blue Aussie bookie. Now, James Graham, I want to talk to you about the Super League Grand Final, which, of course, happens this weekend. I watch a lot of Super League. Some people do. Some people don't get into it, I guess, maybe because of the hours it's on TV. You still follow it, obviously?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the Grand Final this weekend. The biggest challenge that I'm going to face is choosing whether to go straight through, because it starts at 4 a.m. or get up early. It's just that, it's that odd time, isn't it? 4 a.m. So what to do?
Well,
what,
mate,
to do?
With two kids, you're going to sit up till 4 a.m, then watch a footy game. That, mate, you are going to be cactus. You're going to feel like you played a grand final.
Well, maybe that's the answer's there then, isn't it? I've got to go to sleep and set my alarm early. So, problem solved. Mm. I will set the alarm nice and early to get up and watch St. Helens v. Catalan. 1v2.
Yeah.
St. Helens going for their Three-peat, their third in a row of grand final victories. I was fortunate enough to be a part of that second victory last year, and Catalans looking for their maiden premiership over in the European Super League. So it's a great game, 1v2, and two great coaches, Steve McNamara and Christian Wolf, who I've had the pleasure of being coached by both of those, who I think would be, you know, very much open to coming and coaching in the NRL. So interesting to see how both of these get on, because that could be really important for their future job aspirations. Obviously, as well, one of the other subplots in grand finals, which we know and love and add to the romance of it, it's Australian's very own James Maloney playing his last ever professional game. So, for Catalans and for him, it'd be great to send him off as a winner, but I'll be firmly supporting the team that I grew up supporting and fortunate enough to play for in St. Helens. So it should be a great cracking game.
So just rattle off for us, James, a few other of the Aussies or Kiwi players that are in and around these two squads.
Yeah, so obviously James Maloney is probably the biggest name known to many. Big Sam Cassiano there playing at Catalans as well. And yeah, at St. Helens, they've got Lachlan Coote and Kevin Naguama, who is both really good teammates of mine, and Joel Thompson as well. So
yeah
lots of eyes on plenty of expats, well, Aussies and Kiwis playing over there.
And you mentioned those coaches, which the interesting thing is, obviously one of those guys an Aussie. Steve McNamara has been here before in a more minor role. But these days, when an NRL job comes up, you do get one or two Super League coaches' names thrown into the hat. So you think they'd be up for it, most of these guys?
Yeah, absolutely. It would be great to see an English coach come over here and get a head coach's job within the NRL. And I think McNamara would be one of the main two candidates, along with Sean Wayne, who coached Wigan to grand final successes, and obviously the coach in the national team. And, you know, it seems like a natural stepping stone for aspiring coaches to go over to the Super League, get their experience there, you know, be in charge of their own team in a full-time environment to then come back. And I know Christian Wolf really well. He was my head coach for 6 months, and you know, the job that he did and the influence that he had and the impression he made on me was absolutely first class. And he's gone from strength to strength, obviously winning the title last year, winning the Challenge Cup this year, in the final this year. So no doubt when jobs become available next year, which I think they will, it's been a bit of a quieter year in terms of NRL coaches being sacked. I believe there's only the one in Cronulla.
Yeah, John Morris.
John Bomber. Morris, that's correct. Yeah, John Bomber Morris was the only one to move on. So what that sort of says to me is that there'll be a fair bit of movement in the coaching ranks next season. There's a lot of coaches under pressure, and no doubt when some of them get moved on or sacked or however you want to spin it, then you know they will be looking to people to obviously take up the new job. And I think someone like Christian Wolf would be a prime target for them.
Good on you, Gemma. Well, we know what your heart says. What does your head say? Who's going to win this?
Yeah, heart says St. Helens, head said St. Helens as well.
Time to talk a little bit of boxing. Tyson Fury up against Deontay Wilder. Before I go to you, I know you know a fair bit about this, James Graham, but as usual, they're all talking trash. Have a listen to Tyson Fury.
He says he wants to do bad things to me and hurt me and do all this malice feelings, and he's got anger and aggression. Well, for those who hold a hot coal with the intentions of throwing it at somebody, guess what? They're the ones who's going to get burnt. I don't want to hurt Deontay Wilder. I just want to beat him in a fight. And he knows what he's saying is lies. And deep down in his soul, he knows that he lost. And he'll lose again. And he lost the first time, he lost the second time, and he's going to lose the third time. And guess what? After this fight, he'll be back working in that fast food chain that he was working at earlier on in his career.
I mean, I've heard some trash talk in my time, but hot coal and back to the fast food chain. I mean, this guy is talking some serious trash. Gemma, who do you like in this fight?
Yeah, he's an absolute master at it, Tyson Fury. The art of deception. To look at him, he doesn't look like much of an athlete. He's 6'9", I think, and over 120 kilos, but he moves like a middleweight. He really does, and he's such a great boxer. And I think sometimes that's the genius of Tyson Fury. His deception. You look at him and think he's just a trash talker. He once turned up to a press conference in a Batman outfit. Like, wow. You know? But he sells fights. He makes me interested in fights. He's great to watch. This is obviously the trilogy, the third fight. The first fight ended in a draw, and then an emphatic Tyson Fury win where Wilder's team threw the towel in the second one. Lots of excuses from Wilder. You know, his ring costume was too heavy. That slowed him down. He was, you know, Fury was cheating, all these allegations, but should be a great fight. Sunday afternoon in Australia. I'm got to predict Tyson Fury will get the win. He looks very ring sharp, but the heavyweight division thrown into all sorts after Anthony Joshua's loss last weekend or the weekend before to Usyk, which you know, was a bit disappointing being a British fella and obviously wanting to see Joshua and Fury go head to head in the coming months, the super fight. But to focus on this fight, absolutely Tyson Fury all the way. He's got the boxing skills. Wilder does have that knockout power in his right hand. He basically just has to touch people and knock them out. But yeah, Fury for me all the way.
So you lost me when you said he turned up to the press conference in a Batman suit. Do you think he might have been on his way somewhere else after the press conference?
Yeah, maybe. He's quite the loose cannon in his former days, Tyson Fury, known for, you know, he's been pretty upfront and honest about his battles with mental health and, you know, some of that led him down there, some poor choices in terms of drug and alcohol abuse, but he's addressed those issues and he's just a bit of a larrikin, but boy, he can box. It's just this image that he portrays where, you know, it would put you off your game. Imagine if you're going to fight someone, you think they're going to be super serious, very professional, training the whole time, and then they turn up in a Batman outfit. You'd be thinking, who on earth am I dealing with here?
Exactly. Well, Alexander the Great Volkanovski is fast becoming one of Australia's favourite sports people. Recently defeated Brian Ortega to keep his featherweight title. And we've got him on the line. Alexander, great to speak to you.
Cheers, mate. Thanks for having me. It's good. You give me something to do, just chatting, you know, chatting with the boys.
Well,
talk whatever, you know what I mean, while I'm stuck here in quarantine. But
what about while you're in quarantine, mate? I'll send James Graham around and you can kick the absolute tripe out of me. How about that?
Yeah, that'd be good. I wouldn't mind a punching bag in here. That'd be very handy.
That's the last thing I need, mate. Look at the state of my face already.
Let's talk about your career. I know that from my time spending a lot of time in the Gong myself, that you were a pretty reasonable rugby league player with the Warilla Gorillas, but now, of course, you're one of the biggest names in your chosen sport. Talk to us firstly about that transition out of rugby league into the octagon.
Yeah, it was just, I played rugby league, for probably like 12, 13 years or something like that. Yeah, I used to be prop forward, you know, 5'6", you could imagine, prop forward. I was wide as I was tall. But, I've always loved martial arts. It's always been something I wanted to do, you know. I've always thought about it. You know, I had my Macedonian and Greek uncles always fighting about the warrior blood and all this type of stuff. So it's always been something we've all loved, like my whole family, but something I always wanted to do. So even while I was playing rugby league, the last couple of years, I end up just pre-season in between the seasons. I thought, you know, I'll keep fit, I'll do some martial arts, and just absolutely loved it and was pretty good at it, pretty handy at it. And then we thought, you know what, let's just take it on. I had my last year of football, had a couple of fights, the fights went well, and the rest is history. Here I am.
Did you ever get approached by any professional NRL clubs to trial with them at all?
I was obviously when I was younger, a little bit younger, I probably ruined a couple of chances because I was a rep. I was like, you know, with the Harold Matthews and all that type of stuff. And I remember the funny little story there that was not really funny, but I'll obviously known for my hard work and all that type of stuff. But there was a time when I was in the rep side, and I was like scabbing lifts off a mate of mine and their parents, because my parents were working hard and I couldn't get a lift there. So I was I was relying on these guys to come pick me up, and I just felt like a burden, an absolute burden. I remember them just like, you know, there was one time that they couldn't pick me up and all that, and I just felt too bad that I literally just said, I just stopped going because I didn't want to be a burden to the people taking me. So it was funny. And then from then, it was just like, I tried to go back maybe a month later. And I remember they go, nah, mate, that's not how it works. You can't just come back like that. I'm like, oh, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, I know. So that wasn't a good start for me with the rep sides. But, you know, I made a lot of rep sides after that. But yeah, never the NRL.
Mate, what about you know, talk to us. I mean, I can't think of anything more brutal than what you do for a living. And here you are at the top of your chosen profession. When you're not in lockdown, you're not in COVID, talk to us about what would be the daily routine for you when you're getting into, you know, fight mode for a big fight.
Yeah, well, like it's just, yeah, obviously, especially when I'm in camp, some of the sessions we do is just, it's very, very hard on the body. So recovery is very important. But I'll do anywhere from, two to three sessions a day. And, but yeah, the recovery, some of these sessions are tough. So the recovery is in camp, you know, I've got to be a little selfish. That's something that I've been doing the last couple of camps, and it's been, you know, my recovery's been on point. You know, the wife's been, you know, just relaxing in between sessions and all that. She's like, I've got the kids. I'm like, are you sure? Yeah, yeah. All right, no worries. I'll take that. But yeah, it's pretty full on. It is a full on schedule. You know, we're obviously always busting our ass, but it needs to be done.
As much change since you've become champion in terms of your preparation? Obviously, you know, they say it's hard to get there, but then it's even harder to stay there. And obviously, you defended your belt twice now. I'm just wondering, has anything changed? Obviously, you've got more media commitments as champion and stuff like that. And just how have you handled that change?
Yeah, there's always going to be more media, and you know, there's going to be a lot of things that comes with being a champ, but. You know, I'm a pretty level-headed guy. You know, and I'm the type of guy that, you know, I'm a, you know, yeah, I've got a world champion, you got a UFC belt and all that, you know, all the crazy stuff, you know, VIP treatment or whatever it is, however you think it is. And then literally, you know, the next minute I'm back home with the family, I'm just dad, you know what I mean? I'm just me. You know, I'm walking the street and I'm just me, the same guy I was 10 years ago. So I'm pretty good that way. So even though it does get busy, I'm able to switch off pretty easily, which helps me a lot, especially with everything that comes with this, your training and all that type of stuff, and like you said, the media obligations. But being able to switch off is something that really probably makes me who I am. And even training and all that, you know, I don't get overtraining because I'm like, I'll do that and then I'll switch off, and then all right, once I'm back in there, time to work again. Let's go.
Yeah, it sounds like you're still a hungry fighter, and I've heard you say that you want to keep this belt for a long, long time. And you know, obviously you're a family man as well. But just how long do you envisage this going on for? And who do you have lined up next?
I still feel like I've got a fair few years in me, but you never know, I guess. But yeah, I'm 33 now, just turned 33 last week. So I've definitely got a few more years in me, and I'm planning on defending that belt quite a few times in that time, and. We'll see what happens, but we don't have a matchup just yet. We've got Max Holloway and Yair Rodriguez who will be fighting for that number one contender spot, and yeah, whoever takes that will be getting a shot. So that if Max wants to take that means he's going to get his third chance of trying to take that belt away from me.
Yeah, the trilogy would be awesome to watch, mate. Have you got any ideas on a venue? Have you spoke to Dana White about potentially bringing a title fight to Sydney or maybe Wollongong? I'm just thinking about setting up an octagon down at the beach there, having an outdoor arena. It'd be great, mate. Have you got any goals in mind or any bucket list fights that you want to happen?
Mate, that'll be incredible. You know, we Wynn Stadium or something, you know, having a, you know, one day, maybe later. You know, obviously right now, like, we'd need the bigger arenas. Mm. So I'm hoping to fight in Australia, you know, early next year. If we can do that, that'll be definitely something that we'll push. But now, them conversations haven't started yet. We'll just have to play it out, see how things go. But, mate, I haven't been able to defend my belt in Australia, so that's something I really want to do. I was meant to fight in Perth 2020 before this whole thing happened. It was lined up and all that type of stuff. And then I didn't get the chance to defend it. But, I'm always going to bring that belt back to Australia, but I just want to defend it here on home soil, you know.
Wouldn't that be amazing, Alex, in Wollongong, where every other person is Macedonian? I know that because I lived there for so long, and every other week we'd be at a party for someone's christening, someone's birthday, someone's going overseas, someone's coming from overseas. Every Macedonian was having a party for something. Could you imagine if you won a title down there, if you won a major event down there?
Oh, mate, it'd be incredible. Yeah, you're right, mate. The support is just incredible in Wollongong. It always has been. Even the little local shows before I was in the UFC, like, you know, we're selling them out. And again, the support's always been incredible. So to bring something back to them would be amazing. But I'm sure even if it is in Sydney or something like that, you know, I'm sure they'll all travel to Sydney and fill that stadium out anyway.
Yeah, mate, that would be something else. And one guy in particular that's sort of been active and pretty verbal on social media after your victory the other week was Conor McGregor. Any thoughts on what he's had to say so far?
Oh, man, like just, every time there's a bit of hype on someone else but himself, you know, he has to obviously try and take some of that limelight. You know, he always tries to get a tweet out. He's clever. But, I mean, you know, he can't really take what he says too serious. But, mate, if he wants to come down or if he wants me to move up, we can have a dance, get paid well. Hey, I'm all for it.
Hey, speaking of getting paid well, mate, what are your thoughts on these YouTubers fighting and stuff like that? You know, you got a guy like yourself who's, you know, give it their all. It's your life's work, and you've got YouTubers making an absolute fortune that have got no real experience fighting. Have you ever thought about fighting one of those guys, or what are your thoughts in general on it?
Yeah, man, that'd be pretty incredible. To try and be competitive, even if I was to, you know, at the end of the UFC, obviously we can't do this type of stuff while we've got the UFC contract. But, you know, I was thinking, you know, later in the career when things are going, like to have a boxing match. You know, we've got a lot of guys in my weight. So I've always thought about that. We've even had like little conversations about it. But one of the YouTubers, mate, even if it was Jake Paul, Logan Paul, they're twice the size of me, but I'd love to get in there and do work because, yes. Again, I'm used to the big boys anyway. So
yeah.
if they want this smoke, even though this is small smoke, trust me, I'll bring it and I'll teach them a lesson.
Yeah, nice. That'd be great to see, mate, teaching them a lesson for sure.
But again, in saying that, when we're talking about them and obviously such big fights, so much money in it. But, you know, it is an entertainment business. It is a business, so I get it. But, you know, it would be good to see them fight someone that's going to really bring it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, hopefully we'll see that soon.
Hey, it's always good to catch up with you, mate. We love you very much and we wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This is the Rush Hour on Triple M. James Graham and Maroon filling in for MG and Liam. Now, we were going to speak to Benji Marshall here and now, but you're not going to believe this. Don't drive off the road if you're in the car. He didn't pick up his phone, which has just got me baffled. Absolutely got me baffled that Benji Marshall didn't answer the phone to one of his work colleagues. But anyway, let's do this.
It's story time with James Graham.
Oh, yes, I could just imagine you at home in the Shire with the little ones gathering round the big jammer man for a story. What have you got for us tonight?
Oh, yeah, so taking me back to my earlier playing days back at St. Helens. I'm not going to reveal the identity of this player, but let's just call him Player X. Anyway, we've gone for a bit of a team night out on the Saturday, painting the town red. We had some fun. And this was back sort of early sort of 2006, 2007, before the days of mobile phones and WhatsApp groups and all that. So mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had the big night out on the Saturday. Sunday, obviously, you're just in recovery mode. We come to training on the Monday and everyone's, you know, catching up on how the night went. And anyway, it was, hey, do you remember Player X, what he was getting up to? And yeah, he was carrying on a bit and putting himself around some of the members of the opposite sex. And you could see on the in the sort of the group area of the training ground, Player X was very quiet,
right?
And sort of didn't want to expand too much on what happened. And obviously, you know, lads being lads, we're not want to try and diffuse the situation, we want to escalate it. So like the rumors started going around that the lady of the night that he was with happened to be the partner of one of the local gangsters.
Oh, right.
So this started to worry Player X. He was, he was digging himself a hole, and with worry, and lads kept saying it's not. He's a bad man.
So did they create this rumor, or this was actually true?
It was more of a trumor. Let's just say a trumor. So yeah, you could see the beads of sweat dripping from Player X's face, and he could barely concentrate on the task at hand, which was training. He got himself into a bit of a pickle, into a bit of a worry. So much so that lunchtime comes round, he didn't want to go to the cafe in case this gangster was going to be knocking around or waiting for him. So anyway, we've trotted off to the cafe, and we're going to bring Player X coffee on the way home. But before we do that, we're sort of conspiring about what we can do to continue this wind up. And yeah, a few ideas got passed around, and you know, jokingly, someone said, "Oh, let's get someone to come in and pretend to be this gangster." Like, oh, all right, okay, yeah, whatever. Well, you know, just sort of shooting the crap like lads do and trying to concoct plans. Anyway, gone back, got Player X's his coffee, and you know, we're sort of still winding him up about it. Anyway, sort of we go home from training, and next day we come back in, and the a group of us that had been for a coffee, and one of the lads goes, "We're on." I'm like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Someone's coming today." And we're like, "You're joking?" He's like, no.
So the player thinks the gangster's coming.
No. He doesn't know the gangster's coming.
Yet.
So there's about five of us that know that someone's coming down to train and imitating
the gangster.
The gangster. So anyway, I am as giddy as anything. You can barely take the smile off my face. Anyway, so we've gone out to do our, we've had to tell a coach as well. So the coach knows, Mick Potter, and he knows that someone's coming to impersonate a gangster at training today at some point. So we've trained, and then one of the lads who knows is on the wing, and he can see in the bushes that there's a guy there ready. Oh, we got absolutely, well, the five of us got absolutely nothing done in this training session. So the cue for the imitating gangster to come is when we drop to our knees at the end of the session. We take a stretch. Anyway, the training session finishes. We gather around Coach Mick Potter and we drop to our knee. Next minute, out the bushes comes this guy with a baseball bat. He's come with the baseball bat and he's going, "Which one of you is Player X? Right. You've ruined my life. Now I'm going to ruin yours." And everyone's kind of like, whoa, steady on. Anyway, he threw the baseball bat down and drew out a gun. Anyway, 25 of us have just started legging it. Like the whole group have legged it back into the, and this guy's shooting this gun at the group. So we've ran as fast as we possibly can. A few of us that were in on it knew whatever was happening, but ran into the sort of changing rooms. Everyone's in a mass panic, like, "Whoa, what's going on? There's a guy with a gun, like, he's shooting at us." Like, anyway, it's sort of like calmed down and we've gone, "Oh, got your Player X." And he's like, no. I knew it was a fake. Anyway, a big commotion's finished up and we asked him, like, what's that gun? He's like, "Oh, it's just a starting pistol." Like there was no bullet in it or anything. But, you know, most of the lads didn't realize this. Player X is like, you know, pretty cheesed off that we've set him up like this. And anyway, we've gone outside to sort of like continue the stretch down, and we're just having a bit of a joke with the guy that was sort of impersonating this gangster. And then, you know, we're all sort of like, "Hang on, someone's missing. Where's Leon Price?" Leon Price is one of the best number sixes that I've ever played with. And you know, where is Pricey and all this? Like, he was here. And then about 2 minutes later, Leon Price has come creeping round and he can see we're all laughing and joking. And he's like, what are you guys doing? What's going on? He didn't know it was a joke. And we were like, "Hang on, not what are we doing? Where have you been?" He goes, "Oh, I knew that the gangster knew that Player X wasn't black, so I just left you all." Because he was like, "I'm saving myself. I'm going away from the group." So we're like, "Oh, geez, Pricey, you just look after yourself. Leave the team to be shot dead. You've just bailed." So, it was quite the day at training. And not long after that, Player X... He got his revenge on us all. We were all in his little black book. He wasn't too impressed, but one of my favourite ever training days.
Can I ask, was Player X Australian?
At I can neither confirm nor deny that, mate. I am not going to say where the nationality or any more to the identity of Player X.
Okay, we'll leave it there, and we will see you again tomorrow night here on The Rush Hour.
Sounds good.
Triple M.